Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and it is already August 3rd, 2022, and I know a lot of you are back to school this week, and I want to wish you good luck. Okay, so you're going back next week, too, and I want to wish you good luck, too, okay? Just hope you find all the superintendents found all the teachers they need. I know there's a shortage out there, and that everybody's ready for the new school year. For those of you who are going back, mostly in the South and West, the Northeast tends to go back after Labor Day. But anyway, the time is now, so bless your sweethearts and good luck to you out there. Okay, I really mean that from the bottom of my heart. This is Education Talk Radio. I'm Larry Jacobs. We have a nice show for you today. I got Phyllis Wolfram, my dear friend, who's the executive director of the Council of Administrators of Special Education. That's CACE over CACEC.org. Okay, or is it CECCACE.org? I'll find out. It's CACECC.org. Thank you, because they're part of the Council for Exceptional Children. She's also brought with her Myrna Mandlowitz. Both of those have been on guests. Both of those folks have been guests here on the show before. We're going to talk about special education administration in terms of advocacy and Section 504 and some new discipline guidance that is out there. This important show for everybody because, you know, what we do with the special ed is very important. It has to do with social-emotional learning, all right, for a lot of kids out there. We got to advocate for special ed in tight economic times, and we got to understand what the discipline is all about. So it's good stuff as the school year begins, and I'll bring you guys one in just a second. I just want to make a couple of comments here. Everything we do is linked and at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Our magazine, Equity and Access Pre-K-12, the back-to-school issue, will probably be out the beginning of next week. Okay, might be out on Friday this week, but you can check it starting on Monday next week. And we're really excited about the back-to-school issue. So I'll thank my Appleby, my partner in all this, who does a beautiful job putting the magazine together. You can just click on the cover over at ace-ed.org and enjoy the current issue or the new issue, which will be out shortly. All right. Teacher-retention.com is our newest website. It's all about professional development. It's all about teacher retention. It's all about the educator shortage. Please check it out. Again, linked over there. Our awards program for excellence in equity. I just found out yesterday we are extending it. I own the company, yet I'm the last to know. We're extending it because we had a lot of people still want to put in nominations, et cetera. So we're thrilled about that that's so popular. Nominate yourself, your school, products, people you work with, et cetera, et cetera, for Excellence in Equity Pre-K-12. And also every podcast we do is under the podcast icon, and you can check out seltoday.org, our SEL Resource Center. Everything's over there at ace-ed.org. And I hope we're very proud of what we do, and I hope you enjoy everything we do. And I'll say hello to my good buddy Phyllis and her good buddy Myrna. Good morning, Phyllis.
Good morning, Larry. It's so nice to be with you again today.
Always a pleasure to have you here, my dear, from the great state of Missouri. How's life out there today?
It's a little steamy, but we're making it through. But nice clear skies, no rain, that's for sure.
Yeah, good, and welcome to Missouri. It's steamy. Welcome to Missouri in the summer. That's all I can
tell
you. Exactly. Am I right? Yeah. I'm Myrna.
You are.
I'm Myrna. How you doing?
I'm fine, Larry. Good to be with you again. Very pleased
nice
to be here.
Nice to have you here. Nice to have you. Where are you? Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from the nation's capital, Washington D.C., where it's always hot and steamy.
Pardon my coughing and my asthma's acting up here. Okay, it is always hot and steamy. Okay, actually, I'm talking to two hot and steamy places today, Missouri in the summer and D.C. in the summer. Okay, really. Really, right? So let's get the steam rising here and talk about CACE, the Council of Administrators of Special Education, and what they're doing regarding advocacy. What you advocating for these days, okay? Phyllis and Myrna, you're a CACE policy consultant, so swing it over to her if you want. Oh, yes, Phyllis, what's the hot stuff these days, Phil?
Yeah, let me start. You know, when I was kind of doing some preparation, I was thinking, you know, what I want to talk about. And, you know, I just said advocacy because I think, Larry, everything we do is about advocating for our students, making sure they have the right services for our teachers, for our administrators, our parents, our families. You know, we want everybody on the same page advocating. Yeah. And, you know, we just came off of our legislative summit that we do in Washington, D.C. We bring our all of our members in that are able to come. See, CASE has been doing the legislative summit for 20 years now, coming in, educating, and advocating with all of our congressmen. About 8 years ago, CEC joined us. They said, I have to brag a little bit. They said, you know, CASE, you guys are doing such a good job of this. Why don't we join you, join efforts and do it with you? And we said, we'd love to have you. And as a result of that, our numbers grew. You know, and we average around 250 to 300 educators going up to Capitol Hill and advocating and educating our congressmen. And I thought that was just important to just kind of set the stage because we want to talk about, we had three major issues, but I also, as we talk maybe a little bit more about what's happening with 504 and what's happening with discipline, all that, you know, when all that comes out, we have to continue to educate and advocate for what we need in education. So just kind of setting that big framework for what advocacy really means. But I'm going to toss it to Myrna and just let her tell you a little bit about, we have three primary issues, and I'm going to let her share those with you that we highlighted. We said to our congressman, this is a big deal. You need to listen to us. Here's what's happening out in our schools right now. So, Myrna, I'll toss it over to you and let you talk about those three issues.
Thanks, Phyllis. Larry, please, I think
Before you go on, Myrna, I just want to ask one question. I can ask you, Myrna. All right. We always talk about advocacy, and then we always say, well, we went to Washington. And we talk to our congressmen, our representatives, our senate, their offices, et cetera, et cetera. And, Myrna, I just want to ask you, we always put it in a Washington framework, and you live in Washington. But, you know, we also have 50 state governments, all right? And when we're talking about advocacy and special ed and states-run education, how important are the state governments in all this? And I just want to put that in perspective, and Myrna will not. Myrna?
Yeah, I think, Larry, that is a prime question. I actually did a presentation yesterday for some higher ed folks, and this was exactly what we focused on. I think more than ever, state governments have become prime. I think anyone who watches the news, who might have listened this morning to the primary results or more and more decisions are made at the state level. You know, at the federal level, it's grand, large, and whatever, but at the state level, they really define what those state education agencies and the local school districts have to do. And I think who is elected is critically important these days. We're not a political organization, but we do encourage our members very much to pay attention and research the candidates so that we can ensure that we're electing education-friendly members. But state government really has a huge role to play now, and local government as well. So I think when we talk about advocacy, we want to ensure that people understand that the skills that we're developing are transferable to the local, state, and federal level, although we're a national organization, which is why we talk mostly about federal.
Right. And you know, what you just said, and I don't mean this political, okay, but it's a headline across the country, okay, and forget how I stand on it or anything else. In Kansas, there was a big movement to protect, in light of the Supreme Court decision about Roe versus Wade, there was a big movement to protect abortion rights, and that was in Kansas, Missouri's neighboring state, obviously. And you know, again, regardless, I'm not talking about the politics of that. What I'm talking about is the importance of things being done on the state level. Okay, and that's okay. Yeah, and it was highlighted just this morning. Again, it's August 3rd. Okay, so we have to advocate at all levels. Now, Myrna, we'll get back. What are those three big topics?
The first one I think you teed up at the very outset of the show, which is shortages, and we have heard nothing from our members but the fact that there are shortages across the education spectrum, from our own administrator members to the fact that we're so many such a huge shortage of teachers and specialized instructional support personnel, which is critical in special education. All those other folks, the occupational and physical therapists, the speech language pathologists, the mental health providers, all of those. So not only are there shortages on the ground, but there's a great deal of problem with getting people into the pipeline to go into the training programs so that at the other end we have graduates coming out to fill these shortage positions. So that was really our overarching issue. I guess the second issue I would mention that is always prominent is the issue around funding, appropriations as we call it in the political biz. And really, I think we want members of Congress, we want our state legislators, our local legislators to understand that an investment in education means saving money down the line, and it means bringing more tax money into the tax base when we have folks that are more educated. So money is a huge issue. And the third issue was around, I guess what I would say, returning to school issues and particularly focused on mental health, and you mentioned social and emotional issues, but mental health piece where we've all suffered trauma over the last 2.5, almost 3 years now with COVID, and how kids have reacted and staff as well, and the need to have strong, qualified, professional mental health providers in schools. So those were the three issues that we really hit when we took our members up to Capitol Hill in July.
Right, and I'll tell you, obviously it all runs together, but you talk about having the right professionals in within schools, and then the first thing we talked about was the incredible educator and professional, I may add, shortages, okay? Yeah. There just aren't enough people, okay, in these positions. Yeah, it just runs together, all right? And, of course, they're not in it. Let me just go full circle here. Because we need more dollars thrown into it, more dollars for training, more dollars for advocacy, and more dollars for pay for these people. Okay? It's really a vicious cycle of all these things. And so I'll swing back now to Phyllis. Phyllis, you went up there, you talked to all your congresspeople, or at least their staff. Actually, did you talk to any of the actual congresspeople or senators?
You know, We had quite a few this year of our state representatives and our members who were representing their states who got to meet directly with their senators and representatives. What was interesting is I think people wanted to see people after not being face-to-face with people for so long. So they did meet with quite a few staffers, but of course what we know is they have education specialists on staff.
Of course.
And so those are the bright ones. Those are the ones who understand the law, understand what we're dealing with, and they carry the message. So it was nice to get to meet directly with some of the representatives and the senators, but it's always great to have those in-depth conversations with the staffers who really know what we're talking about. You know, and I just wanted to add one more thing as Myrna kind of laid out and you were talking about advocacy in general, and doing it at the state and the local level. Another point that we really emphasize is that, you know, our advocacy is all year round. So we do once a year, we do our fly-in, and we come into Washington, D.C., but, you know, we have to continue to build those relationships and continue to educate and let our congressmen at the local, at the state, and at the federal level know what we need as educators. And we need to inform. We all need to be informed about what the issues are, the data and the statistics behind why we're advocating for more appropriations, because we have a teacher shortage, because we have social-emotional learning issues in our schools. And and I think once we educate each other, we can continue to have that conversation all year long, and that's what it really takes, I think, for us to make a difference.
Oh, without question. I mean, we can't just do it one day a year and walk up the Capitol steps. I mean, it's that simple. And, you know, with special ed, I have to ask one thing, and Phyllis, I'll stick with you on this one. How important is the voice of parents in this? Mm-hmm. Okay, and you know they're strong advocates for their kids in special ed, but how important is the voice of parents and getting them involved, getting them involved?
The parent voice is extraordinarily important. I mean, I can't emphasize that enough. You know, and I'll tell you that the greatest voice is the voter. You know, that when you walk into an office of anybody at any level, and you can say, you know, you represent me. And so when a parent says, you represent me and my child, and here are the needs of my child, which are very special, you need to listen to me. So I as a parent, you know, and being a parent myself, I want the best for my kids. And so a parent voice is very strong. Encourage that advocacy every day.
I couldn't agree with you more, and thank you for that. And Myrna, let me ask you, when you walk up those Capitol steps and you talk to these folks, okay, congressmen, okay, in the House and their staff, and of course senators and their staff, how was the reaction this year? I mean, it's nuts as ever, and not to mention the midterms are coming. Okay, what was the reaction this year as you talk to them? I mean, anybody can be a yes man when you folks walk up the steps. Yeah, we agree with that. Yeah, we agree with that. Yeah, but really, what was your sense of it, Myrna?
Well, I guess I would say, Larry, that we are in a sort of divided time now, and I think...
Oh, I didn't notice. The reaction
might be what you would expect, but one thing I always say is that special education particularly is a bipartisan issue because people across the spectrum have children or have relatives or have connections with individuals, with kids who have disabilities. So we are fortunate in that regard. I would say one place, and mental health this year has become a huge issue, again, across the spectrum. I would say money is the one area where people still will differ, you know, with one party feeling that the budget belt needs to be tightened and the other party feeling that, you know, we need to invest more. And so I think that's really the reaction. And I think Phyllis also said it, when a member of Congress has a constituent in the office, whether it's the member themselves or it's the staff person for that member, the welcome is always much more cordial than when the hired gun lobbyist shows up at the door. So, you know, in that regard, it's really nice for our folks to go up, but it's also important for our folks to understand that they get a special reception because they are voters and they have to dig a little deeper and do a little greater analysis and research of where those members really stand on these issues. I hope that helps you. You know, I wanted to add one quick thing, Larry, about advocacy, because the one thing we didn't mention is that we also advocate at the regulatory agency. So for us, that's the U.S. Department of Education. So the advocacy goes both to the legislative branch and to the administrative folks, to the Department of Ed that implements special education, and we did have Valerie Williams, the director of the Office of Special Education Programs, at our special education summit, and so we got to hear from her and our folks got to interact with her, which is critically important for those Department of Ed folks to hear what's happening on the ground. So that was another advocacy opportunity.
I really appreciate you mentioning that because it's something we always talk about walking up the Capitol steps, but you also got to walk in the door to the Department of Ed. I appreciate you mentioning that, brings the executive branch. In case some of you didn't know it, I include our congressman in this. There are three branches of government, just in case you didn't know that. Executive, legislative, and judicial. Okay, so I'm glad you went into the doors of the executive branch, which is the Department of Education. That's just so key, and I think we got to mentioned Secretary Cardona. I hope he is anyway. He seems to me to be a good guy. Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to ask you something, and I talked about this at the beginning, and I don't really know what this is, so I'm going to throw this out to you. Okay, there's some kind of change happening, and this is important for you special ed folks, of which I am hardly an expert, okay, but I try to get the word out. As Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act of 1973, okay? Somebody, I'll throw it to Phyllis. You can throw it to Myrna if you want. What is that? What kind of changes, and what are they thinking of doing? Okay, what are you guys doing about it? So I'll throw it to you, Phil, and you can do what you want with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really important for all of your listeners and all educators and parents to be aware of what's happening. Just in May, this past May, the Department of Education announced their intent to strengthen what's currently in regulations, protections and rights for students with disabilities by amending Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. And what they did is they actually, before proposing regulations, you know, we go through that system, we have a law, and then the Department of Education develops regulations, and then those regulations become those implementing standards by which we respond or which we implement the law. And so they ask for input prior to sending out proposed regulations. And they want to hear from the field what needs to happen, what needs to change. And that was new. That was something very new. So they hope to have new regulations out in 2023. So they're taking their time. They want to do it right. Myrna, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I remember reading it's been 45 years since they've made any changes
around 50 years, really. 50 years.
Yeah.
Well, nothing much has changed in the last 50 years, so that's really, I'm glad they took their time on that.
Nothing's happened in 50 years, right?
So it's time to strengthen that law so that the protections remain in place for our students with disabilities. At the same time, we need some real common sense approach so we don't increase paperwork, we don't over-regulate, but we ensure that those services are provided to our students in our schools. And this is more along the lines of providing those direct accommodations, it's not special education services per se. It can be, but we're really looking at accommodating individuals throughout the day, throughout having accessibility in all of our schools, which is really important for all of our students.
What does that actually mean? Okay, boil that down so that I can understand that. What is the acceptability for all these students? What does that actually mean?
I'll start, and then I'm going to toss it to Myrna because she's a little bit more of an expert in the law than I am regarding that. But when we talk about accessibility, one of the easiest things that I can give you an example of is making sure that our buildings are accessible for individuals who may use wheelchairs.
But you go ahead. I want an explanation anyway. Go ahead.
Yeah. We want them to be able to access their environment, but at the same time, we also want them to be able to access educational classes. We want them to be able to have accommodations in our classrooms. So it covers the whole gamut of accommodating those students based on their learning differences. Myrna, what would you add to that to help with that explanation?
Well, I think that the difference, I would draw a distinction between Section 504, which is really an anti-discrimination law. You cannot discriminate against a person, and this is children all the way through adults, based on their disability. So the difference is, I think that IDEA is instructional, and as Phyllis said, 504 is accessing the instruction. So, for example, you know, we often think one of the examples we often give is a child who has attention deficit disorder, who has a difficulty attending to what the teacher says. That child might be placed physically closer to the teacher so that the teacher has more direct contact with that student. It might also be that specialized instructional support personnel are designing the environment in a way that affects the child differently for a child who has sensory issues or something like that. But we're really focusing on making sure that all kids can access the instruction in a way that's meaningful. And what I would say also is that we want to make sure that we understand that IDEA, the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, and Section 504 are two very distinct laws, and they're distinct in the way children are eligible for services. All children with disabilities are eligible, are qualified under Section 504. The word is qualified, not eligible. Under IDEA, they have to fit into one of those specific disability categories that are enumerated in the law. So it is quite different the way it's constituted and the purpose of the law, I would say. I don't know if that helps, Larry.
It does help. Of course it helps. Thank you very much. So this is really key stuff, and then I'm going to have to ask this question. If they amend all this, and this is always the challenge, okay, and Myrna, I'll stay with you, any type of change like this or any type of thing requires money. And you know, do they understand that they have to also give you the money to do all this sort of stuff? What's the thought on that one?
Well, you have drawn another very clear distinction between IDEA and Section 504. There is no federal money attached to Section 504. So any changes that are made, some of that money, and Phyllis can speak more about how the money goes out. She's really the expert on that. IDEA has a very distinct appropriation that goes along with it, but Section 504 does not. I think when they say strengthening Section 504, they're looking at changing the language. What we're concerned about, what I will say for CASE, is we are very concerned that they will turn Section 504, if you will, into a mini IDEA. And as I stated, the purposes of these two laws are very distinct. So we want to make sure that they don't go too far down the road in making 504 exactly like IDEA. There are already some areas in the regulations that just say, well, if you need policies and procedures at the state level and at the local level, and you can use the IDEA procedures. No, we do not want that to happen because the purposes of these laws are very different. And the children that are served are also can be different. In fact, Section 504 is really a general education piece. It is not special education. It is situated in general education, even though often the special ed administrator ends up administering 504 as well.
It gets complicated, I got to tell you. And I love the fact that you guys said, I think this is the first time they actually asked for comments long before they passed the law, comments from the field, which I thought was really kind of interesting. Yeah, it's about time they figured that one out. Yeah, it's just,
Larry, I also want to clarify that they are not looking to amend the Section 504 law. They're not looking to amend the Rehabilitation Act or what the law says. They're looking at changing the regulations, which is very different. That's a very different process.
How is that different? I don't even understand that. How is that?
Amending the law means Congress is acting. Updating or revising the regulations, as you put it, is an executive branch thing. That is something that the U.S. Department of Education takes up, not Congress. So Congress, they are not asking that Congress amend the words of the statute.
Got it.
The Department of Education wants to review and revise the regulations that implement the statute.
A camel is a horse designed by Congress. Thank you. I'm glad you're not involved. Great. We don't want to wait for them. Yeah.
Yeah.
I, you I, didn't me, say that. What? I said it. I said it. I said it.
Larry, let me add one more thing about we were able to submit some comments, and we partnered with our friends over at the School Superintendents Association, AASA, and being of one voice, because as Myrna said, it's really situated in a general ed environment where everyone is responsible for implementing the anti-discrimination law. And I think when we look at it that way, it seems that people don't think that, well, don't discriminate. That's what the law is about. So what kind of money do you need? But when you get down to the regulatory requirements, how you have to implement the law, it does require staff. It requires sometimes modifications to your building, modifications, accommodations to your classrooms, to how you provide services. So there is a financial impact to school districts, but it is an unfunded mandate that we have to implement. And as Myrna said, you know, from the funding aspect, the funds then come from state and local monies. There is no federal contribution to assist with this.
Unbelievable. Okay, moving right along, I got to ask this one. We got to go in a few minutes, but I do want to talk about it because I said we would. According to what you wrote, new guidance helps schools support students with different disabilities and avoid discriminatory use of discipline. What does that mean? From DOE.
So the Department of Education continues to provide guidance with regard to discipline of students with disabilities. So they have come out with some new guidance just of late, just came out within the last, I think, 2 weeks. And so we are in the process of working through that, being able to educate our members and our leaders in special education as well as general ed, because most of the discipline is done by principals. And so there's new guidance out. We just wanted everyone to be aware of. It's important that they read it. We're in the process of going through it ourselves and understanding what is different from the guidance that was previously put out by the department. And then I'll tell you that on September the 29th, we'll have our quarterly legal update, and we'll be reviewing some of those changes in that guidance as we're studying that now and going through the in-depth guidance that the department has just recently put out. Again, that's September the 29th. We have a quarterly legal update. It's called the Weatherly Review with Julie Weatherly. We're glad that you mentioned that. That's real important that everyone is aware that that guidance is out, and we need to get on top of it and understand what it is that we're going to be required to do, if anything, differently.
Just give an example of what is going to be different. What's changed?
I think at this point we're still looking at, are there any significant changes? Some of the primary aspects that we look at is discipline with regard to suspension, and are we following all the procedures so that we ensure that students are not suspended based on any action that would be the result of their disability. And we see that as a struggle throughout, especially when we come to the issue of emotional disturbance or those students who are really dealing with serious emotional learning issues. So it takes a lot of understanding and knowledge when it comes to discipline and helping students who have some social emotional learning difficulties.
Yeah, SEL is just so darn important these days. It's just all pervasive.
And you know, And as we said earlier, you know, that's one of the pieces we continue to advocate for, just because, you know, it's federal law that we're implementing in special education. So we're implementing for additional funding for mental health services for our students. And it's an ever-growing concern, especially given what we've been through the last couple of years with the pandemic.
It never ends. I hope we get it right this time, as we all we just got to do it. Okay, it's that simple. Phyllis, thank you. We got to go. Myrna, thank you. You guys are terrific. I love having you on. Thank you.
Thank you,
Larry.
Take care.
You guys take care. It will cool down eventually in both Missouri and Washington. Okay, but keep the pressure on Congress. Keep the pressure on your state legislators. Okay.
We'll keep going, guys.
Thank you both.
Thanks, Larry.
You're welcome. Okay. Good pals. Myrna Mandlowitz is the case policy consultant. Okay. And if you want to get in touch with her, it's MRM Associates. MRM Associates. Okay. And Phyllis is the executive director over at CEC.org, okay, part of the Council of Exceptional Children, and it's the Council, the Council of Administrators of Special Education. Okay, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org, like we do all the time, and please check out all the stuff we do over there. And again, SEL, teacher retention, professional development, it's all really important. Please check it out. Thanks for listening. Talk to you later.